We continue with the comprehensive review of IFRS for SMEs.
Yeah. The purpose of this meeting is for the ISB to begin discussing the issues in the request for information on the comprehensive review of the IFRS for SMEs. At this meeting, we're asking the board to consider the issues relating to the scope of the IFRS for SMEs and also recent changes to IFRS, as we think these are probably the main issues in the comprehensive review, and decisions on these issues may influence other issues in the request for information. One point about the agenda papers, I have included an extract from the final draft of the SME Implementation Group report. The report has now been finalised, so I can confirm that the extracts won't change in the agenda papers, apart from maybe minor drafting. And the full report from the SME Implementation Group will be provided to the board for the next meeting. So Agenda Paper 6A, if we start with Agenda Paper 6A, which contains the issues on the scope of the IFRS for SMEs. The staff have combined issues 1 and 2, which were originally separate questions in the request for information for the board discussions. Issues 1 and 2 are basically whether or not the scope requirements are currently too restrictive. Now, the intended scope of the IFRS for SMEs is entities that do not have public accountability. And the ISB cannot actually prohibit jurisdictions from letting publicly accountable entities use the IFRS for SMEs, but there's a paragraph 1.5 in the IFRS for SMEs which prohibits those entities from stating compliance with the standard. The reason we have a question is because some constituents have told us that it would improve reporting for publicly accountable entities in some jurisdictions. For example, this may be where they're currently applying local standards which are inferior to the IFRS for SMEs, or maybe they're applying full IFRS but they're not doing so very well because of lack of resources in the jurisdiction. We've also been told there are some entities that meet the definition of publicly accountable, but perhaps they shouldn't be excluded from the IFRS for SMEs. For example, they may have the similar the needs of their users of the financial statements may have similar needs to users of non-publicly accountable entities. In short, the staff and the SME implementation recommendation is the same, and we believe that paragraph 1.5 should be deleted to allow local authorities to decide whether other entities should be able to use and stay compliance with the standard. So the first question to the ISB is whether the ISB agrees.
I really wonder, can we forbid this?
We can forbid, but it is what
it was. Doesn't really, I mean, if for example, a country like Brazil wants to allow smaller companies on a separate trading market to use IFRS for SMEs, but we cannot really forbid it, can we?
No, but we can forbid them using the term.
Yes, so then they'll have to say this is Brazilian IFRS for SMEs.
Just like the UK has done, and they've done some exceptions and allowed some publicly accountable entities to use it, but then they call it UK GAAP.
Yeah. It's very unique that an entity prohibits others to use its products.
But the real point of the publicly accountable is when we consider what should be in the standard. Because when we think of what should be in the standard, we have to think about who it's for,
of course.
And so,
yeah. So we thus far have always said that this is not intended for companies that are publicly listed. Jan?
I don't think it's unusual. On the contrary, I think it's very usual that you try to protect your brand, etc. I have a lot of sympathy for the direction that this is going. And this was a real big issue, and we had some people, a little formalistic, I would say, very afraid of this standard. And I think that we have been able, now we have more than 80 countries going for it, and I think we should have this direction, but I think it's too early to do it. I think we should do it next round of changes, because we shouldn't get people to stand up and start to complain that this is the wrong standard, etc. This is now really gaining territory.
So I
would leave it without opening up. And then if Brazil would like to do it for someone, or Sweden, or so, they can do it, but they can't call it IFRS.
Mary?
My thoughts along the lines of what Ian was saying just a minute ago about when the board made decisions about how to modify Big Book for the IFRS for SME, the benchmark was different kind of entity and different user needs. And I think before we say we're going to step away from protecting our brand, we would have to ask the staff to do different kind of work rather than just consulting, which is a good first step, that says, okay, what are the recognition, measurement, and disclosure changes that were made? And if you think of it being for a different user group, do we think that there are any problems raised by that? As you look at it, maybe that we should say to a regulator in the standard, if you're thinking about permitting broader use of the standard, be aware, for example, of the following simplification. Just a quick chat with Michelle. We didn't do this, but if we had said in the SME standard, all leases are operating leases, that would be the kind of thing we would want to flag, as a recognition and measurement issue. So I think before I'd be comfortable answering A, I'd want to have a high level overview of what the differences were and kind of do a quick assessment of them in terms of the impact on users, rather than relying solely on the feedback that we've had, which I think is an important step to raise the issue, but to me isn't enough information to decide how I feel about answering A.
Philippe? I'm generally supportive of the evolution that you propose. I would say yes to question A. We cannot prohibit it. It's just not realistic. Now, as to question B, I think the reality is more complex than it looks like. There is not a black and white situation in terms of public accountability. It's not that you are either publicly accountable or not at all. And there are some intermediate situations regarding trading of securities. We have regulated markets, no question, full IFRS, of course. And we have fully private companies, and they do what they want. And in between, you have some form of negotiation of shares on multilateral trading facilities or all sorts of new developments which have taken place recently, which are not regulated markets. And where currently the choice is either full IFRS, which may be quite too much in terms of complexity and cost, or local GAAP, which do not provide any transparency or comparability in many cases. And I see the use of IFRS for SMEs for certain types of situations as an improvement over the current situation without requiring application of full IFRS. So I would acknowledge in the document that there is a complexity in terms of what kind of trading, what degree of public accountability there is, and I would leave some freedom to regulators to permit the use of IFRS for SMEs in certain of those intermediate situations.
And call it IFRS for SMEs.
And call it IFRS for SMEs, because there is one benchmark, that is this package, and which may be quite appropriate. Now, it might be that the regulator may wish to add some disclosures on a case-by-case or market-by-market situation, and it's always the case. If you look at the regulated markets, people apply full IFRS, but there is all sorts of disclosures that come on top of it. Regulation ethics, ESMA's regulations, European directives come on top of the IFRS. So it's not all contained within IFRS anyway.
Rigo?
I agree with the staff proposals. And my thinking is very simple. I don't think we need or we are able to take into further discussions on what kind of entities should be in or not. And I will support staff idea, just keep the current definitions and let the regulators decide.
Stephen?
I think we need to be careful here about brand protection and reputational risk. So I'm sort of cautious on it. However, if a regulator does say you may use IFRS for SMEs, I think the entity should describe exactly what they're doing and should be able to say it is IFRS for SMEs. But my support is conditional on us having a disclosure, and that is that the entity disclosed that it has used the IFRS for SMEs, but it is outside the intended scope of that standard, but has permission to use it because the local regulator has said so. And I think that would then, something along those lines would then protect us in terms of that sort of reputational risk.
Doug?
Yes, actually this month I had an opportunity to welcome people from developing countries in Asia to the Asia Oceania office. 33 people from 15 countries came to our office, and we had a discussion. Actually, Ian made a presentation via video. And I had an opportunity to talk with a lady from an emerging country from Southeast Asia. And she said that in her country, she established a security exchange market just 2 years ago. And only two companies are listed in their security exchange market. So they are trying to apply full IFRS. And she said it is really challenging. And then I realized that it could be quite a high hurdle for those emerging countries to ask those listed companies to apply full IFRS. And it could prevent them to expand their new exchange market, because they are just establishing infrastructure now. And to apply full IFRS, to ask full IFRS could be the higher for them. So in that sense, I would say that we could allow publicly listed company to use SME for the kind of transitional steps forward for them to establish that infrastructure. So in this sense, I agree with staff's recommendation.
Martin?
I disagree with the staff proposal, because I think, as was already raised by some people here, saying, okay, that the risk for our brand is very high, because I think, and also 70% of the comment letter respondents have also said, okay, that is not the purpose that we use here for SME for listed companies. And if something happens, a scandal or whatever, I think people will not distinguish between full IFRS and IFRS for SMEs, and will blame really our standards. And therefore, I really see a high risk of our brand, and I'm really not in line with deleting that paragraph.
Patricia?
I agree with Martin. I don't support the staff. Well, I do support B, strongly support B, which says we should remain clear that its intended scope is entities that do not have public accountability. I don't agree with A because of the reputational risk problems. We're having difficulty enough identifying those countries around the world that are applying full IFRS without amendment or carve-outs or little adjustments. And to move to permitting the use of IFRS for SMEs for publicly accountable companies, I think is just going to increase the confusion about what IFRS is. And I think that's going to cause reputational problems. Now, that being said, I think Mary had a good suggestion in that I, for one, and I don't know about the other board members, don't have a complete understanding, because I wasn't here when the IFRS for SMEs was finalized. I don't have a complete understanding of the differences between full IFRS and IFRS for SMEs. And I've always been led to believe that in reality, if you were a small company, that you could apply full IFRS, but it would really be IFRS for SMEs, except for maybe amortization of goodwill. Because if you don't have the big complicated things that you need to look at full IFRS for, it isn't complicated to apply full IFRS. It's only complicated if you have complicated transactions. So it's not clear to me really what is the significance of this exactly. So I think Mary had a very good suggestion.
And what was your suggestion again, Mary?
Ask the staff to go back and provide an overview of main differences that especially could impact the information that users get, kind of looking at recognition and measurement on the one hand and disclosures on the other, not with a view to changing the standard, but for having that analysis and seeing if there's anything that we want to highlight as a difference. So that we said to a regulator, consider it, but be aware that this is the impact it would have on...
BK?
You know, this was a discussion we had at the time of finalizing IFRS 2, specifically 1.5. I'll just give you an example just to make you aware, perhaps might change some of your thought process. I'll take the example of India. I believe there are 13,000 listed companies officially in India. The number changes, but somewhere in that range. Even if IFRS is going to be applied in India the way we intend it to be applied, they believe it's not going to be applied for more than 300 companies, because they're large and they're big and they make the thing. So the question comes down in my example of 13,000 is, what do you do with the remaining 12,700? They have no intention, because they're very thinly traded, small family-oriented companies and things like that nature. So they are not planning ever to have them to do IFRS the way the full book. So it's better for them to get onto IFRS for SMEs rather than not having reverting to Indian GAAP, for example. So I think in that sense, it's a step in the right direction, and I think the regulator is very cautious and careful about it. So I respect the reputational issue being raised here, but I think it's overcome by the benefit that will come to the marketplace.
Amaru?
Thanks, Sas. Yes, I have the same perception as PK. I have the benefit of being following quite closely the IFRS in general implementation in Latin America and SMEs in particular. I have also the benefit of being following the discussions on the consultation for updating IFRS for SMEs. I think many aspects that are presently forbidden the IFRS for SME might be reviewed by us in the future set of papers. So in that sense, I understand why we are discussing scope at inception, but if we had discussed the other changes that are coming, it might be easier to discuss scope at the end, because then I think Patricia and others will be more comfortable with the outcome, and particularly the comparison aspect, the level of information. I guess there are many aspects that staff will bring that will enhance the general level of information. I do agree with staff. I always disagree when we standard setters try to forbid a jurisdiction to implement something. So it's in our benefit in general. And particularly the experience in emerging markets is that they are really trying to develop capital markets. Capital markets is one portion of the financing structure in those markets. For many years, World Bank and international organizations are trying to develop capital markets in these regions. And this is still at inception in most of them. And the difficulties when we talk about IFRS is exactly the lack of resources to implement full IFRS. allowing them, or not forbidden in the other way, IFRS for SMEs to be used by a portion, a set of entities that could be public. And then at a later stage, when they have the capacity, go to a full IFRS, I think it's in our benefit. And we can provide, such as the Steve's idea on the disclosure, we can provide the clear information about the set of IFRS that is being used, and it's under the general knowledge, the limitation, let's say, of IFRS for SME compared to that, to the full IFRS. And to Mary's point, I believe that exactly the issues that she's proposing the staff are the issues that will come in the next set of papers. So we have an option here. We either discuss the scope now, or we discuss the scope at the end after considering all the points. So it's much more, because I believe asking the staff to go back and bring in this information is actually anticipating all the papers that will come on the IFRS for SMEs.
Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say so, because it's only a select issues that people have brought up. It won't cover all the differences between IFRS for SMEs.
A lot of what I was going to say has been said, I think, by PK and Amara. I would, though, support what Mary's suggestion was, if only because I think it's really important that regulators understand what the difference is when they're making. What we're effectively doing here is we're talking about pushing the decision to regulators to make that call, and I think they need to clearly understand what the differences are between the two sets of accounts. I wanted to pick up on, also follow up on a point that Amara made about the resource thing. Just make the point that I think the reputational issue cuts both ways. And right now, one of the reputational issues we've got is that people are having to implement IFRS in jurisdictions where the resources aren't available. Because of that, firstly, we're hearing a lot, I certainly hear a lot when I'm traveling, about how IFRS is too complex, there's too much, the disclosure is too difficult. That's actually a resource issue. The bigger companies don't necessarily have the same problem, but the smaller companies do. Secondly, because they're obliged to implement IFRS, and because they don't have the resources to do it, you very often find sets of financial statements that are not fully compliant with IFRS, but say they are because of the lack of resources. So I think this reputational issue actually affects both sides of the equation, and I think it comes in from that side as well.
Actually, Darrell just said what I wanted to say, but I'm also a bit worried by the tone of our discussion about the reputational issue. Do we really believe that IFRS for SME is such a bad standard? That a company reporting under
a different purpose.
I think it's a good standard. It's appropriate for certain types of entities in terms of complexity. And we should not forget that there is a default. If a transaction is not contemplated by the IFRS for SME, the company should fall back onto the full IFRS. And that is clear. So I think the only risk in terms of reputation is a confusion as to which set of standard is being used.
Exactly.
So if we manage to clarify and to require full clarity on which is the framework, IFRS for SME or full IFRS, I think we should be able to manage this reputational issue.
Thank you. Basically, I agree with Martin said, you know, most respondents, about 70%, you know, they just don't want to stick to the current proposition and the standard. You know. So that is a good point. You know. And also there are, you know, pros, cons on that, this you know, requirement. But it seems to me, you know, this is a kind of a jurisdiction decision whether we apply this IFRS for SMEs to the public, you know, accountable entities. So, but I think, you know, so because of that, we don't need to remove the scope evaluation. But another thing is the cons for this the SME is if we stick to the prohibition of the this IFRS SMEs to public entities, then this borders the adoption of a full IFRS. There is so many issues raised by the respondents. If we stick to this prohibition, then that will make, you know, other countries, many countries, to, you know, make get some disincentive to have a full adoption. That's all described in your paper very well. So I wonder whether that is true or not.
I'm looking at what, 9?
It's page maybe. Yeah, 9, paragraph 9. A, B, C, that there are some reasons why we have to remove that point 5, what, 15. But I guess I am not sure whether this prohibition really discouraged the full adopting of full IFRSs.
You mean the prohibition from stating compliance with the IFRS SME, do you think it prohibits adoption?
Right.
Sorry, I don't really understand the question.
You don't understand, really? I'm just curious about whether that is true or not, the paragraph 9b there.
That was the point raised by one of the comment letters.
Uh-huh. So, you know, I'm just, based on this, your good analysis of respondents' responses, so we are making some kind of conclusion based on this analysis. But basically, whether this is all, is a very true, valid reasons for this conclusion of the board. So I'm just checking whether this is really...
But this is really just a summary of the comment letters rather than me making any judgment on them.
So you're not sure whether...
No.
All right.
Mary. Back to Amaro's suggestion that we hold the analysis until the end. I just think it's important that we know as we're making decisions about any changes to the standard to know whether we're doing it with the expectation that it would be used only by companies without public accountability or might possibly include companies used by companies with some degree of public accountability. So I think Amaro's point is good. Don't go into exhaustive analysis about something that may change. But I think we probably have to make the scope decision.
But that's B in the question, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think if on A we are removing 1.5, we should recognize that the effect is that we are permitting the IFRS for SMEs to be permitted by local regulators for use by entities with public accountability.
Yeah. So you disagree with B or agree?
Well, I think if we're going, if we say yes on 1.5,
yeah,
we can't say yes on B.
It seems inconsistent, no?
Because yeah. I think we would be pretending that it's only for entities without public accountability when we know the point of removing 1.5.
Except if we don't go with B, what is the scope? I mean, we're up into the never land then.
Yeah.
I thought to an extent that we were seeing, and certainly if I can talk about the discussion that happened at the SMEG group, what the essence here was to try to address those entities that have public accountability in terms of our definition,
mm-hmm,
but are either so small, or they are over the counter traded, mm-hmm, or they are things like credit unions, so very small companies where, in effect, our definition, as we put it, our definition of public, mm-hmm, of what these financial statements for is still valid.
Mm-hmm.
And to use that as the guidance for regulators. So when regulators sit down to make the decision about who should be included, and perhaps a classic example here would be the credit unions, when they sit down to make the decision, they know that this is the framework that we've used, and they need to make that decision in the context of that framework. And I think that was very much the feedback that we were getting at SMEG. Mm-hmm. It certainly wasn't that we were looking in any way to open the door to listed companies across the board.
Yeah. Yeah.
The idea here is that it must be those listed companies who, by the nature of their listing or the nature of the market, actually meet the requirements in B.
Well, but I've heard very different things as we've gone around.
I think that is the reality, and I think what we probably need to be quite careful is how we take a decision here, because I think it has gone a little bit over the place. I do think the suggestion that was made that maybe we don't delete 1.5, but we amend 1.5 to say that you can say IFRS, but then you need to explain in further detail that you have been allowed by your regulators and you didn't pass the public accountability test. Makes a lot of sense. So I think that helps with the process. And that's why I responded to your comment about the guidance that we need to give to regulators. I think regulators need to understand the difference, because that's the key in them making the decision about who should be able to use it and who not.
That
what Dal just said, I guess, was where I was, because I answered no to A and yes to B. And I was thinking along the same lines as Stephen did. Now, I have watched the U.S. in this area for the last 30 years make changes in the regulatory arena without necessarily changing GAAP. So they've catered to the small business marketplace. They've catered to small offerings as well through regulatory action without having to say, you know, we're going to allow you to modify the actual accounting principles that you're using. So I think you can go down that path. Now, how the market essentially would receive that, I don't know, but I think in PK's case, if you have 12,700 companies all doing the same thing, there won't be a stigma associated with this kind of, you know, good housekeeping label that we might be talking about. So I'd be fine with that, but I would not want to go down the path of removing 1.5 for the same reasons that Martin articulated. I think that very sound.
Pat, you know, what you described the U.S. environment is, you know, SEC staff are so sophisticated. They are so sophisticated. They can tackle the complicated issues and then come down to soften the requirement to those small companies. But the developing nation like Cambodia, Barbados, they are as well wrong. They both, the regulators, the auditors, also, as well as their preparers, are competent. And Martin mentioned about the reputational risk, and I fully agree with, you know, Daryl. There are so many countries, they can claim, they use 4FS. Yeah. But who knows the quality of the actual implementation? I think to give this opportunity, you know, can make sure, you know, some kind of, you know, the qualities, we understand each other, and the others can do, and the regulators are able to do. So I feel much better, you know, less reputation risk.
Chuck?
Yes. I would like to respond to Changgu's questions, and I have same line with Weigel. And the country which I raised, in that country only two companies are listed now. And they want to increase the numbers of the listed companies in order to expand the capital market in their country. But they have now dilemma. They want to keep the status of IFRS countries. So they are really supporting our initiatives. So they want to stay in the IFRS adopting country. But at the same time, they want to increase the number of listed companies. In that case, she said it's really challenging to ask a listed company to use full IFRS at the outset of, you know, raising fund in the capital market. So I think to allow SME could be the step forward for those countries to expand their capital market. And our aim is to contribute to the public interest of the world and expand the capital market. And I do not think to allow SME to those listed company could not undermine our brand value.
Okay, let's vote on question A. If the vote on A would be no, then we do not even need B, I think. But no, because that is only important if you... It's implicit in A. But with the additional comment made by suggestion made by Stephen that if you would apply IFRS for SMEs that you disclose that this has been done with the express approval of the regulator and that IFRS for SMEs was not particularly designed for public capital markets. So.
I like the first
amendment, another second, this stigma that it was, I applying a standard that was not designed for me is a very bad stigma on the company. And I don't think that it is true that the standard is not designed for this entity. It might very well be applicable and designed for this entity. So the stigma I would not add to this disclosure.
The other thing is that we need to think about audit opinion, how it will look also. I don't think we can think on fly.
That's why I made a comment. I made, yeah, I don't know what
Daryl, how would you formulate?
And I'm guessing that what we're looking for is we're looking for an explicit statement that we're saying we'd allow the statement that it is complicit with, or that it is compliant with IFRS, but we'd also want an explicit statement.
IFRS
for SMEs. An explicit statement that it is publicly accountable. Within the definition of public accountable.
So I would not
combining those
that.
Two things somehow.
I would not support that.
Oh, no, me.
Okay. What, and perhaps we should ask.
That's not what Steve suggested.
What Steve's suggestion was, because that's maybe the, it was one of the suggestions we received in the comment letter, wasn't it, that we actually spell it out.
And that it is publicly accountable. Well, of course it is publicly accountable.
Yeah.
What does that F? I don't understand.
Because what we're saying is that you can be, or generally speaking, IFRS for SME companies are not publicly accountable.
Oh.
That's the general precondition.
The design for
so if you are actually publicly accountable, it suggests that there's an additional factor that you've taken into account in coming to the decision that you can still use IFRS for SMEs.
That's a problem.
And I think my understanding of what Steve was saying, and I think that additional comment letter was saying, was that we need to somehow make it clear that this is the exception to their general principle.
That's the problem, sorry. It's not black and white. You cannot say I am or I am not publicly accountable. There are all sorts of intermediate situations. If you have 299 shareholders, you are not publicly accountable. If you have 301, you are now publicly accountable. Does it make sense for us to...
The problem is that we go further than that. What we say is you might have only two shareholders. But if those shares are potentially tradable on an exchange, they traded on an exchange, then you're publicly accountable.
What kind of exchange? Sorry, it's not that simple.
Well, what
kind
of exchange? We are talking about companies with shares that are being traded, so obviously they're publicly accountable.
Now, I just go back to the letter from ESMA. Does it make the difference between a regulated market and a multilateral trading facility, and it's quite different. So, for them, it's regulators speaking, not me. So I think even the regulators do acknowledge that there is a variety of situations and that this notion of publicly accountable might be seen in terms of degrees, either of black or white.
PK?
Not to muddle up the discussion, the point I wanted to make is that if a company in any country has to use a certain set of GAAP, be it IFRS full or SME or Indian GAAP or US GAAP or whatever it is approved by the regulator for that purpose, right?
I think it's up to the regulator.
Up to the regulator. So I'm just saying that if Steve's point is fine, if you want to put it says under the guidance of circular number 4 and 4 and 4, we are allowed to use IFRS for SME, therefore these financial statements are prepared under IFRS for SME is fine. I just want you to think through what will be the audit opinion impact, if any, that we thought if you want to do that amendment. That's all I'm trying to say.
It'll be an exception.
I think we should leave it to the regulator. Yes. They're welcome.
I suppose that
won't be clean.
In a disclosure, there should be an expression of the considerations of the regulator to allow this for SMEs.
That's fine.
I think, and that should be enough.
It would only be an except for if our standard said you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
As long as our standard allowed you to do it, it wouldn't be an except for.
But can I ask a question? My understanding was that SMEs was developed for small, medium-sized entities, but in addition, which are not publicly traded.
Yes.
Is that right or wrong?
Yes. Yes.
And if that is, and if we want to protect our brand, and SMEs was developed not for publicly traded, then we can only what Steve said. We need a disclosure and saying that okay, it was not SMEs which was not developed for publicly traded companies. Well, otherwise, I think we cannot protect our brand with
a disclosure. Who can agree with the recommendation in A, accompanied by a disclosure of the considerations of the market regulator?
Eight.
Is that enough?
I'd like staff to think about the disclosure perhaps a bit more. We're trying to do it on the fly.
Okay.
And I think that's too small a vote. I think we'd need to bring it back anyway.
Yeah, this is too small. I'm not feeling comfortable about this either. So it's probably best that staff, having heard this discussion, thinks about it a little bit more and about possible disclosure requirements, and then we bring this back to the table, okay? Because we should not take this decision by 8-7.
I encourage board members to read the ESMA's letter, which I think explains very well the complexity of this notion of publicly accountable. Okay. I think we should have it in mind.
So what does it mean for the rest of the
Probably A, B, and C is all to come back, would it?
Well, could I raise a point on C? It's a problem we had in the UK when we adopted this, and it's in paragraph... it's the one about fiduciary holding money here, paragraph 17b. It holds assets in a fiduciary capacity. Well, in fact, the bank doesn't. I mean, the situation with the bank is you lend them the money and they lend it to somebody else. I mean, there's a great story in the Pacific when they opened a bank, a Fijian guy used to go back every week, take all his money out and count it, and put it back again to make sure it was still there. But
when you live in Cyprus, not such a bad idea.
But we have a lot of trouble because we say that in the UK, we say a bank doesn't hold it in a fiduciary capacity. I mean, in fact, they're just straight borrowing the money from you. And so I think we need to reconsider how all that's worded. I mean, it's quite difficult.
But you don't think banks are fiduciaries?
No, they're borrowing the money from you, and they go and lend it to somebody else.
Well, they have other activities.
That's why you have deposit insurance.
I mean, you see it now in Cyprus, and the deposit guarantee systems are basically, rather new thing.
And the same, they take insurance companies. I mean, they definitely take your premium, and they do all sorts of things with it. If something goes wrong, pay you out some money.
In the times when banks were still normal companies and not completely backed by a state, then you were able to lose your money.
The UK did think of a way around it.
They're not separated funds. But they're still not.
It's quite difficult to say that those funds are held in a fiduciary capacity. It's not like a trust fund where the money's still yours and you hold it in one trust fund. They take it and then...
I think what's probably relevant here is the rest of that sentence, which then specifically says most banks, credit unions, and are included in this. So I suspect that this was probably something that the board, when they decided on originally, wanted to see banks and credit unions. Yeah.
No, I agree with the intention. So it's just the wording.
The fiduciary is probably the wrong word in that context. Yeah. It's more people holding money on behalf of others.
And as I say, I think the UK, with the UK gap, came up with some other words that achieved the same purpose. Okay. So you could have a look at that.
All right. So we bring this back. I think we can continue with the other question. No?
Yeah. It's just another small issue on scope, which is clarification of use by not-for-profit entities. A question was asked in the request for information, as we received several queries on whether soliciting and accepting contributions automatically makes a not-for-profit entity publicly accountable. The staff thinks that the ISB is clear in paragraph 1.4, where it states that charitable organisations are not automatically publicly accountable by holding the assets for a broad group of outsiders. As you can see in Agenda Paper 2, responses to the questions were a lot wider than the question asked, because many respondents were suggesting that the ISB should specifically address issues for not-for-profits, either in the IFRS for SMEs or in a separate project. The staff and the SME Implementation Group recommendation is that no change should be made to the standard and that paragraph 1.4 is clear. Does the ISB agree with the staff recommendation?
Yeah.
No disagreement?
No.
Okay. To the next paper.
Agenda paper 6B asks the ISB to consider the issue of if, and if so, how, the IFRS for SMEs should be amended for any new or revised IFRS issued since the IFRS for SMEs was published. At this meeting, we're only asking the ISB to start to discuss an overall framework for how to deal with new and revised IFRS. We won't actually be asking you to make any decisions on any individual standards today. We think the main considerations when considering a framework are what to incorporate. So should all changes to IFRS be automatically incorporated in the IFRS for SMEs, or should they only be incorporated, say, if they improve the financial reporting for SMEs? Also, another consideration is when to incorporate. For example, should changes be considered as soon as they're effective, or should we wait until after the post-implementation review? And also how to deal with minor changes, for example, annual improvements, where the IFRS for SMEs is based on the wording in full IFRS. And the staff recommendation is quite long, so I'll just give the main points. The staff and the SME implementation recommendation is pretty much the same. We think the main driver for changes to the IFRS for SMEs should be the implementation experience of SMEs, and changes to full IFRS should only be a secondary driver. We think all changes to IFRS should be considered individually. However, we think they should only be incorporated if they improve the financial reporting for SMEs. We think the minor improvements should only be incorporated where there's a known problem for SMEs. Also, we think regarding timing, that in general, new or significantly revised IFRS should not be incorporated until implementation experience has been assessed. So the question for the board is to discuss as a matter of policy, how should the IFRS for SMEs be updated for new or revised IFRS and also annual improvements?
Amaru?
I have a question here. That's why I may comment on the scope. On paragraph 19A, your suggestion, the paragraph is not very clear to me, just help me this. Changes should only be considered after they have become established under full IFRS. So 3 years plus post-implementation review, 5 years, 6 years we are talking here. So this, if as a general rule, if this is the concept, my response to the scope before could be uncomfortable, because then I'm talking about public accountable SMEs that will be benefited from improvement that we made to IFRS 6 years, so after we agreed for full IFRS. So I think it's too much,
particularly if we took that last decision.
Yeah, well, that's my comment on the scope, that we might consider discussing scope after all the consideration, because then we'll have a clearer view on what we are discussing about. And then you mentioned that changes may be considered earlier if they respond to a known problem. So I think it's too much. I don't know how to frame it, but I think it's really too much, especially if we consider a broader scope for the IFRS for SMEs.
Amaro, your comment on a broader scope goes against recommendation B, or question B in the last paper, where we said we would keep the scope for non-publicly accountable, even though we know that publicly accountable.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with the proposal I would call expanding the scope. But here I felt uncomfortable in having something that we approved and then incorporated in the IFRS for SMEs 6 years after that. And also considered item B in paragraph 19. So within, and after the triennial review. So if it's soon after the triennial review, we still have to wait maybe 1 or 2 years for that. So we are talking, I don't know, 9 years?
Wouldn't it have been enough to just say there is no automaticity that changes in IFRS immediately follow in IFRS for SME, but that you look on a case by case, if you want to do it or not. Isn't that how it should work in practice?
Yeah, one alternative suggestion.
Yes, I think we should consider standard by standard.
That's choice.
And I think it is understood that the threshold can be higher than under IFRS 2.
Agreeing to consider only after it's been fully implemented is too much.
But, you know, for example, annual improvements are often very annoying things that they remove. And why would you have to wait so long if it's a simple thing? On the other hand, we also understand that we don't want to make it such a moving target as IFRS. I mean, we would like to make our own IFRS a little bit of less of a main IFRS a little bit less of a moving target. So I understand that you don't want the same rhythm of change as under IFRS, but it doesn't sound logical to me to try to make very harsh rules for this.
Is what Hans is suggesting what you contemplated in A, paragraph A?
No.
Paragraph 15A. When you gave us all the choices, I'm reading his statement to be that.
Which yes, yes.
That's what I thought we should do. Okay.
I think there are three elements. One, as just as Hans has said, is we should keep this good principle of updating as a package only every 3-4 years, whatever, and not have a moving target. The most annoying thing for companies is to have the standard changing every year and having to do comparative, restating past years to make them comparable. That's the most annoying thing. So if we can manage this good principle that we have here in IFRS 4 SMEs to change as a package every X years. Second, whether or not to change and to align to full IFRS or to keep the parallelism is a matter of cost benefits. We cannot say that in theory, if we change full IFRS, it should not be beneficial because we suppose that it is an improvement. Now the question is, we have a cost-benefit analysis for full IFRS for listed companies. We should have another one on the basis of SMEs, whether it meets the same criteria of cost-benefits or whether a different cost-benefit analysis should be done. And that is our driving criteria for decision-making. Once an IFRS, full IFRS has been updated, I think we should not wait 6 years to do the cost-benefit analysis. If we see there is a good cost-benefit outcome, we should do it as soon as possible within the framework of a triennial revision of the standards. But I think we should try to keep some parallelism between full IFRS and IFRS for SMEs. If we start having a total divergence, then I think we are losing some benefits of the IFRS for SMEs to be relatively comparable to full IFRS.
I thought the staff recommendation here in 19A and B was exactly what Philippe was looking for, and that was a way to keep IFRS for SMEs aligned with full up IFRS, but still maintain for the SMEs the benefit of a stable platform for a long period of time, because for those small companies, one of the biggest problems, I think, with full IFRS is keeping up to date with all of the changes. And the cost that's imposed on a small businessman. And so I thought that the staff recommendation here for a non-publicly accountable SME was perfectly acceptable and was a good balance of keeping things aligned and still not increasing the cost for a small business to keep abreast of all the changes. I would not agree if this were being applied by publicly accountable entities, which is why I had so much concern about the last vote. So that's my view.
Daryl?
I think I wanted to say a little bit of what Pat said, that a lot of what I've heard around here sounds very similar to what we were hearing from the small implementation group. And I think it's very similar with what we should be taking out of the recommendation that's here. I do think Amaro's point about the time span was one that was actually discussed at the SMIG group in some detail and was a cause of concern. And I think what the SMIG had actually recommended was that we should consider every new IFRS as and when it comes out, because that's the only way that we will know whether or not it's of urgent application. their caution was that we wanted to, that IFRS for SMEs would benefit from some of the learning experience of implementing new standards in full IFRS. Mm-hmm. And they felt that we would be making a mistake if we were implementing at the same time, or perhaps sooner would be, I think we learned that lesson with the tax section. So the idea would be that we should be implementing at least afterwards. But you're right, in some of the discussions we got concerned about how far afterwards it would be. So that does sound to me to an extent like we're supporting what the SMIG was saying as well.
Steve? So I don't agree with the staff recommendation on this. I think there's a danger if we do what we're suggesting here that we end up with just divergence and two sets of standards, and eventually it leads to two different boards setting two sets of standards and just sort of thinking down the road. I think we should try the best we can to keep IFRS for SMEs with limited recognition and measurement differences. So identify where we really do need them, fine, apply that, but in other respects, keep them as consistent as possible, obviously with reduced disclosures. So I agree with Daniel. I think we should automatically, or the group should automatically consider after the publication of each standard how they think what do you think the implications would be for the IFRS for SMEs? I agree that we shouldn't put the burden on the SMEs in terms of frequent changes. I mean, I'd actually lengthen out the 3 years to 5 years. I would just lock down the thing, keep it for 5 years, and then lock it down again for another 5 years. But I would produce what the proposed change to the IFRS for SMEs is shortly after publishing a full IFRS. I wouldn't wait for implementation. And I would make that available, because if you're a listed company using IFRS for SMEs, for example, for your subsidiaries, for the subsidiary financial statements, I think it's very important that they have the opportunity of having the same recognition and measurement approach. So I develop the change, make it available for early application, but then bundle them all together and every 5 years change the full thing, and that then becomes mandatory. But I would have the instruction that keeping consistency between the two sets of standards is an important objective, and whilst it's a separate standalone set of standards, it is part of the IFRS family, and therefore we should try and be as consistent as possible in terms of recognition and measurement.
Daryl, having heard the discussion, how would you?
I guess maybe one or two questions for Stephen before we go into it. The first one is that obviously already we have some recognition and measurement differences between IFRS and IFRS for SMEs, not because of changes to IFRS, but because we decided previously that we wanted those differences
in
place.
Yeah.
That already means that the idea of using IFRS for SMEs for your subsidiaries is already a problem. And that's an issue that we heard quite a lot about, absolutely. That we heard quite a lot about from at least certain groups of responders. So I'm not sure I think we'd be going wrong if we actually set ourselves the objective of trying to keep IFRS for SMEs aligned in order that subsidiaries could use it. It feels to me like we're going down the wrong route there, and we're losing sight of what IFRS for SMEs was about. And that said, I think we can probably tweak a lot of what's in the staff recommendation as it stands now to get to compass most of what we've heard without actually having to change much in the recommendation. The problem that I do have is that it does sound like for at least one or two people, the idea of what gets pulled into the scope is going to be quite important in considering this. So I'd be inclined to say if everybody's comfortable with this, we take this, but we at least have it back on the page when we rediscuss the scope. When we look at scope again, just to make sure people are comfortable, it still fits with what the new scope discussion is.
I agree.
But it would be useful to know if people given...
Well, I think there is sympathy for the thought of collecting as many changes as possible in one moment. That moment should not be too frequent. I think 3 years sounds very reasonable. I also hear that if you wait for every change for post-implementation to review to have been done, that might be too long a period. So there should also be room for a case-by-case consideration of whether you want to make the change sooner rather than later.
but not less than 3 years.
In terms of how often?
Yeah, not less than 3 years. I could still imagine that an annual improvement is so urgent that you want to do it.
We'll get to that discussion later when we talk about the Q&As, for example.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
No disagreement with this conclusion?
Okay, we're done?
Yes.
So we continue with conceptual framework, or do we break till 1 o'clock?
We're not supposed to stop till. Depends when we get the framework team together. Do you want to have a.
Why don't we get them together at 12:30?
Aren't we likely to have very different audiences? Yes.
Okay, we continue at 11:30.
Half an hour?
Huh?
We want to do half an hour order.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point.
Aren't we likely to have very different audiences who are listening into the SME discussion versus the conceptual
people
framework
plan
discussion.
Schedule for,
so then we should start at 1 o'clock.
I think so.
We always...